I am as old as this story. It is an ancient tale going back almost 3,000 years. It started when music first tried to find its cosmic origins. With the help of a few wise men along the way, it has sometimes managed to grasp its essence. But let me introduce myself. I lived in Greece a very long time ago, well before your time. My name is Pythagoras, mathematician, philosopher, astronomer, and musician. My contemporaries are Lao Tzu, Buddha, and Zarathustra. Along with these thinkers, I was among the first to believe in the immortality of the soul. I taught this truth and faithfully followed its thread. It is perhaps no wonder that I speak to you tonight. My contemporaries thought that the Earth is the center of the universe. Above us is the sky, a starry vault. The planets and the stars are just beyond our reach, but the gods above can hear our pleas. A few of us started to perceive the true scale of the cosmos. When Heraclitus claimed that the sun is no larger than a human foot, Anaxagoras answered, "It is bigger than a mountain." For my colleagues and me, numbers are a manifestation of universal laws. Following in my footsteps, Plato and Aristotle will attempt to explain everything with mathematics. Everything, even the political organization of a city. But I was the first one to expose the mathematical relationships in musical sounds. This is what I discovered. By dividing a string in two equal parts, I obtained the octave above the fundamental note of the full length of string. That is the distance between C and another C. Then I realized that all musical sounds can be obtained by dividing the string in whole proportions. If you reduce the string to 3/4 of its length, you get a fourth above the fundamental note, or the distance between C and F. If you reduce it to 2/3 of its length, you get a fifth, the distance inside this sphere that moves seven poles. Of course, such swift motions could not be accomplished in silence. Consequently, the outermost sphere, the star bearer, with its swifter motion, gives forth a higher pitched tone, whereas the lunar sphere, the innermost, has the deepest tone. The eight spheres produce eight tones. Skilled men, imitating this on stringed instruments and in singing, have gained for themselves a return to this region. But why, asks Cicero, are we unable to hear these celestial harmonies? He states that the ears of mortals are filled with this sound, but they are unable to hear it. The sound coming from the heavenly spheres, revolving at various great speeds, is of course so great that human ears cannot catch it. You might as well try to stare directly at the sun, whose rays are much too strong for your eyes. Another author of the period states that we cannot hear the music of the spheres because we are submerged in it from our birth. And so we are like the villagers who do not notice the sound of the nearby waterfall. Plato gives us more details. For each of the eight spheres, there is a siren that emits a unique sound, and the eight sounds result in a harmonious concord. The Gregorian chant, Naturalis Concordia Vocum Cum Planetis, of which you will hear an excerpt, is the oldest known musical work referring to the harmony of the spheres.
The ratios of the planets are similar to those of musical intervals.
Yes, says our friend Cicero, the order increases from bottom to top. The Moon, Mercury, Venus, the Sun, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn. In a similar order, the musical intervals must be modulated.
One must start with the Moon, which is closest to the Earth. From there, Mercury is a tone higher.
By this interval of tone, the musical scale is proportioned.
The distance to Venus has the musical value of a semitone. The distance to the Sun is a fourth. The path to Mars, the warrior, is measured by a fifth.
The interval to Jupiter is a semitone.
To these, a tone is added to reach Saturn.
The seventh